Need someone invisible.
I'll do it.
Okay. Thanks, lunch lady.
Hello, and welcome to episode 69 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Puchko and Angie Han.
Hello!
Hi!
All right, so this week we are doing a mini-review of Insidious Chapter 3, and then our big one is going to be for Spy. So we're going to start with Insidious, and that one is mine. Here's the synopsis. A prequel set before the haunting of the Lambert family that reveals how gifted psychic Elise Rayner reluctantly agrees to use her ability to contact the dead in order to help a teenage girl who has been targeted by a dangerous supernatural entity. Yet another accurate one. I approve. But
I've been waiting on pins and needles to see what you're going to say about this one.
That one was a bit of a mouthful, but it is right. But that doesn't mean I like the movie. And I didn't like this at all. And
you were
I'm not sure, too.
I
knew that I was, like, visibly upset after.
You did. You look like you look shaken.
I was, like, I was sad. I walked out of this movie really sad because I adore the first one where I have seen it, I mean, dozens and dozens of times, and I love it. And it's, I don't really own very many DVDs and Blu-rays, but it's one of, like, 15 that sits on my shelf that I'll pop in whenever I just, like, need to have some fun.
So what does the first one do for you that this one didn't?
I mean, just it starts, I'm looking at the DVD right now. I should have put it like you do as props. The first one just feels very unique to me, and it's got this really rich mythology that you're kind of exploring and you're introduced to through this very likable family that feels like a real family you can connect to, and you feel for them when they're going through this, and all of a sudden Elise steps in and she's got everything like down to a science. She's got this really like rich, defined personality to her. And this movie kind of takes that like all away. Yeah. I don't know if I didn't hate the main girl, Quinn. I liked her and I liked the actress who played her. It's just that there wasn't really much to her. And Dermot Mulroney is in the running for like the worst movie dad I've ever seen in my life.
I think that Dermot Mulroney doesn't watch horror movies and so thought that's how people in horror movies act. It's just so schmackty. He's just like, where's my daughter? Ha ha! It's just like, it's so bad. And like the family, like you talked before about how the first Insidious gave us this family that you actually felt connected to. And we said the same thing about the Poltergeist remake where you felt connected to these people. Like Insidious Chapter 3, the family feels so incidental. There's a brother character that you could very well forget exists because he disappears for like a huge swath of the movie and then pops up just something to be like, go to the neighbors. Like,
yeah, it's not just the family either. Like there's the movie introduces a whole bunch of neighbors and like friends that she has that are like all in the first act. And then you just never hear about them again. And it just kind of feels like, well, what was the point of that?
The second movie, which Lee Whannell wrote as well, has a very similar problem where it's about two very separate things happening. And you know, when you set up a movie like that, you're going to care sometimes more about one than the other, and it's just not going to come together. Like the best part about the first one was it was all about the family, and then Elise helped that family. Last time it was about like the Barbara Hershey's character in the fucking hospital, which made no sense, and then back at home with boring the Lamberts who were experiencing nothing new. And this time it's all the shit at home, and then it's like Elise's personal problems with her husband who passed away that kind of makes. Like,
it doesn't
like,
make a lot of sense. Here's the problem I have with the Elise story is that the movie sets it up as if it's the girl's story, but then it's actually Elise's story, so why are we focusing so much on the girl? But then Elise's story is not interesting because we've already seen the first two movies. So the fact that again and again she's like, I can't use my powers, but I must use my powers, but I can't use my powers, but I must. Like, we know it's going to happen, so there's like no sense of tension there. And then worse yet, Lee Whannell just repeats the beats where she literally is saying the same things over and over again and doing the same things over and over again, and it feels infuriating. It doesn't enrich in this mythos that Perry was talking about. It just makes it kind of cheap, and it answers questions you never gave a shit about to begin with, like, hey, why do Specs and the fat guy wear shirts and ties? I've never cared about that ever, but this movie gives you an answer.
Well, you were talking about how the movie repeats a lot of beats, and it's not just the character beats, which don't land as hard as they should because he doesn't spend that much time fleshing out the characters, including Elise, sadly. But it's also the scares. The scares are also, like, in the beginning of the movie, I was like, oh, this is actually pretty creepy. You know, like, you see the monster pretty quickly, and you're just like, oh, okay, that is really off-putting. Like, I was sitting next to you, Christy, and I, like, jumped the first time it came out.
You did. It was adorable.
But then they keep showing it in exactly the same way, doing exactly the same thing over and over and over to diminishing returns, and even the finale, like, I get, you know, where there's the big showdown, as there is inevitably in these kinds of movies.
Well, the problem really with that, too, is it's only jump scares, and then it's only, look at the man who can't breathe, isn't he scary? And that's all it is, this entire movie. One of the greatest things that the first one did is when we saw the fire face demon, you didn't really get a good look at him until much further on in the movie, and it was mostly, like, people hiding in the shadows and kind of, like, popping up out of nowhere, but in conjunction with what was happening in a scene, and in conjunction with the score, too. The score in that movie was absolutely brilliant, and you don't really get
that.
They
barely use music in this.
And, like, the Insidious score is so iconic, where if I hear certain, like, tones and tunes, I know it's that movie. I would have thought they would have put it to better use here. And the fucking bride in black, what did they do to her in this movie? She looks like someone who dressed up as her for Halloween.
Yeah, it's really sloppy. And it's, like, the gratuitous use of her, too. I mean, I feel like there's a huge difference. Like, James Wan left. He's not directing these movies anymore. They let Lee Whannell step in. And I think, one, the script is weak. But, two, Lee Whannell has nowhere near the sense of vision that James Wan does. This movie does not look interesting. The shots are really ridiculous. The acting is bad. Like,
I feel like there was an elegance to James Wan's earlier two films that this film just doesn't have. Everything is just kind of like, you know, like, everything is staged really lazily. Like, all the characters are drawn really lazily. Like,
it feels like a rush job.
And you know, it's kind of a haunted house thing. And I always had trouble keeping track of, like, what is this house? Where is everyone? Like, that was really confusing to me.
It kind of ruins what the further was. Like, at least, I'll admit that the first movie feels a little disjointed when it gets to the third act and all of a sudden you're in this other world. Something never worked quite well with that. It's too much of a jump. But at least that movie established what the further was and gave you, like, somewhat of a sense of the geography with how that universe works. That's kind of all gone here. And it doesn't really make much sense. It's kind of like one of those cheap tricks where someone gets knocked out and they wake up in a dream or an alternate reality, you know?
Yeah.
And that's
so
exactly
to summarize,
what this is.
This is a mess. Would any of you recommend anybody going to see it?
No.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, skip it.
Watch Poltergeist instead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm surprised. Agreed. I can't believe that I'm saying it, but like half, I think you two brought it up after we walked out too. A lot of times during this movie, I thought that I wish I could have seen Poltergeist instead.
So we're going to move on to a movie that we thought way higher of. Spy! So Spy, a desk-bound CIA analyst, volunteers to go undercover to infiltrate the world of deadly arms dealer and prevent a diabolical global disaster. So it's Melissa McCarthy, and she basically has been, like, really great behind the scenes, like, in the ear of a James Bond type played by Jude Law, and now she gets to actually step into the field. And it's a really fucking good movie, guys. Like, I honestly have had a little bit of a problem since we saw Mad Max Fury Road, where everything I've seen past then has just, like, it's like Mad Max blew out my palate, and, like, I just can't taste anything anymore, because Mad Max was so good, everything else sucked. But by
the
time,
to be fair,
the
movies we've seen since Mad Max, I don't think they're movies you would have loved, even if you hadn't seen Mad Max.
But what's cool about this movie is it starts off kind of with a cold open of, like, what she's good at behind the scenes, and then there's, like, a big surprise, and then by the time we get to the animated opening titles that are very, like, Bond, with, like, like, spy stuff going on, like, I was literally, like, in my seat, like, yeah, like, it was exciting and it was fun. And Paul Feig, we saw him do a little bit of action stuff in The Heat, but he steps it up with Spy, and, like, I think the action scenes in this are great. But on top of that, man, the comedy is on point.
Can we talk about
Jason Statham in this movie?
Oh yeah,
he basically pays, like, the Jason Statham type, but, like, exaggerated to, like, you know, comedic effect, and it's perfect.
But he plays it straight. Like, he never winks at the camera. He says all this ridiculous stuff that he's done, which, like, I think some of it is honestly just stuff he's done in the Crank movies. But, like, he says the stuff where he's like, I saw my wife fall out of a plane and then get hit by another plane. And he says it so straight-faced that she's like, what are you talking? And, like, the play of them is brilliant. Like, halfway through the movie, I wrote in my notes during one of their scenes, like, I want a sequel now.
If you've seen that contest that people are running with the face-off machine thing where you can own his face, it's not weird, I swear, once you see the movie. You see that movie and you're going to want his face.
It's still kind of weird once you've seen the movie.
Okay, it's still a little weird, but the joke is really good.
Yes.
But yeah, like, Melissa McCarthy is great in this, and, like, Perry wrote a really great piece about how, like, we don't just need her to be a dumb, you know, dumb bunny to, like, be funny. She's really funny in this, and she's good at her job. It's just that she's on the field for the first time, so it's a little fish out of water, but she's not clueless. And like watching her, what's also cool is the narrative makes it about everybody not really believing in her. So, except for her best friend, who we'll get to, Miranda Hart from Call the Midwife, awesome. But she, it's about her, like, defying their expectations of her and, like, you know, going for it. And so it's not just a really funny and a really exciting movie, but it's one that, like, I walked away feeling really good about.
That's the best part about this kind of thing. And that's part of the reason that I wanted to write that piece, because with movies like, especially, Identity Thief and Tammy, they are so mean-spirited. Whether it's, like, degrading humor towards her, where she has to put herself down in order to earn laughs, or just, like, the fact that characters are so freaking mean to each other all throughout and that's how they get their laughs, that's not really the case. I mean, characters are kind of like poking and prodding each other, but for example, the relationship between Melissa McCarthy's character and Jason Statham's character, it's almost like they're trying to one-up each other to be better at their job, not to be like, you piece of shit. No, you piece of shit.
Exactly. The they definitely undermine her.
The only time that it got to me was when she's making fun of the other, her other security guard. Towards the end of the film, where it's legit just her, you know, mouthing off.
He's a bad guy, though. And Melissa McCarthy is so good at, like, these. Melissa McCarthy is so good at doing those, like, long, vulgar insults that I was happy to see that.
Yeah, and, like, Rose Byrne is in this, which I can't believe we didn't bring her up. Rose Byrne's so good in this. She has some of one-liners that are just, I'm already throwing into my dialogue. So if I tell you that's the Bulgarian clown with you and you deal with it. But yeah, like, the script is just on, it's such good casting, like, it's such good casting that, like, on
even
that
50
alone,
Cent
it
is
works
really
beautifully.
Good in this movie.
Sorry?
Even 50 Cent is really good in this movie.
Yeah! I don't want to get too much into what 50 Cent does in this movie, but, like, I kind of forgot he was in it, like, I had heard that, and then, like, when
you
he shows up.
You didn't see all,
like,
those ridiculous promos that they released? It was like a series, and you know, when he's just standing up and, like, kind of promoting something, there's something inherently awkward about it. So I can't say they play too well, but he's very good in the movie at least.
Yeah, and there's just I'm overwhelmed. I don't know what to talk about next because there's just so many things in this movie I like. Like, for my spinoff review, I said I think it's the best comedy of the year. I'm just really blown away by how funny I found this. Like, at the end, I actually had that pain you get right here when you've been, like, smiling a lot, because, like, it just, I was, like, telling my husband some of the jokes, which I won't do in the podcast because, like, I want you guys to be surprised. But it's, like, there's, like, silly little jokes, but then there's, like, really spy-specific jokes, and it just plays so nicely. And then there's fun things in there. There's, like, a cameo where her husband pops in and the director pops in, and so keep an eye out for those. It's like a game. It just feels like, I don't know, almost interactive in the way it responds with the audience.
I heard that some people thought that it was a little bit too long, but going back, first of all, I didn't feel like it was too long, but even going back, like, I can't think of a single scene that I would take out.
Yeah, I've heard some people say it's too long. One, it's a Paul Feig movie, and, like, Feig, like Apatow, tends to make his movies a little longer than comedies tend to be, and I think this one is 2 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's exactly 2 hours. I mean, like, when people are like, what about this scene or what about this scene? I was like, I guess. But, like, I was never bored, so I don't really care that it's – I feel like it's just that we've come accustomed to expecting a 90-minute comedy. And because it's 2 hours, people are like, well, it better damn well be worth it. But it's like, we get chase scenes. We get action scenes. We get, like, heartfelt moments. I was totally fine with it being 2 hours. I don't want to lose anything.
I mean, this is the third film that Paul Feig and Melissa McCarthy have done well together, and I think he really brings out the best in her. Going back to, you know, to rewind a bit, you know, you guys were talking about Perry's essay and how she was pointing out that this is a movie where Melissa McCarthy gets to be competent, and I really love the way this movie plays with our perceptions of her, because let's be real, one of the reasons that she always gets pigeonholed as, like, the sloppy, mean, dumb person is because of the way she looks. And this movie is also, in some ways, about the way she looks, but it plays with that really effectively. Like, for example, the reason she gets chosen to be the spy and the reason that she takes on the specific disguises that she does is because it becomes obvious that someone who looks like Melissa McCarthy, especially if you, like, kind of frump her down in, like, sweatshirts and, like, tacky hair, is essentially invisible. So I thought that was just, like, a really fun way to spin a fun spin on the spy genre, where usually you get these spies that are, you know, you have, like, James Bond, who, like, a guy like that is walking down the street, everyone's gonna notice even if he's not a spy. I'm not saying that, you know, part of it is wish fulfillment, so it's fun, but I really appreciated the way that Spy played with that.
It reminded me a lot of the stuff from Amy Schumer, where she has a sketch on her show this, I think it was this season, where she plays Plain Jane, who's like an undercover cop that's just normal looking. And so she goes into all these clubs and like literally no one sees her because she's just not hot. And like, it just reminded me of that, where it's like they all think that way of her. And like, and also there's a commentary on the way Hollywood looks at women who are heavier, frankly, because the parts they keep giving her, as Angie pointed out, it's like, okay, you're a divorced housewife who has five cats or something. And she's like, what? Like, come on. And like, they keep giving her these stereotypically sad archetypes, and she's like, but that's not who I am, like, that's, and they're like, no, that's, people will believe that. And I think that's speaking to Hollywood and saying like Hollywood wants to, you know, act like we don't trust that people who are, you know, super glitzy glamorous can do anything else. And like, she keeps defying that, and it's really funny and lovely. And like,
yeah, I think this movie, I was talking to Chrissy about this after the movie, but I think it's a movie that actually really makes a strong case for casting, for more diverse casting in movies, because it's really easy to imagine a version of this movie, you know, a spy parody, basically, with, like, just another, you know, moderately attractive white dude in it. But the fact that the lead character in this is a woman, and not only a woman, but the kind of woman that Hollywood doesn't traditionally want at the center of their big movies, makes it so much more interesting. It allows you to tell a different kind of story, makes it feel fresh, and makes it feel really different from every other movie we've seen in a similar vein over the past, like, however many years.
Exactly. Well, she's not a James Bond. Susan Cooper is her own thing.
Take the success of this movie to heart and stick with that kind of stuff, because if she goes back to Tammy and Identity Thief shit after this, I'm going
to Well,
be
we need to remember that she did, I think she co-wrote Tammy.
She co-wrote Tammy, which and is, I like, get what the they were most trying shocking to do thing with in the Tammy. World to me.
But it's hard. Identity Thief I have a harder time with. But, like, yeah, it's – the thing – I don't mind, like, you know, because, like, comedy greats like John Candy, you know, he played dumb a lot of the time. And I don't have a problem with her playing dumb. But it's exciting to get to see her do something beyond that, because, you know, like, she's a lot of fun as just a hero kind of – in over their head, but, like, raring to go. And, like, you know, it made this spy movie a lot – I didn't know what to expect, basically, because I was like, I've never seen a spy movie about a character like Susan. And it made it genuinely, like, thrilling, because it was like, well, you know, I mean, and not on the level of, like, will she die or not? Like, it's fucking comedy. Like, let's not get crazy. But, like, I didn't know what her next move was going to be, because it's like with Bond, he's going to be like, here's my handy gadget, blah, blah, blah. And, like, you know, there's just a certain predictability to those movies. But with this, they did something much more interesting. And then they also bring in the Miranda Hart character that, as we mentioned, was, you know, it's her friend. They bring her back in, and then it gets to be a story not just about Susan Cooper, but about her friend too, where it's about, like, women working together, and also with Rose Byrne, women tearing each other down. Mm-hmm. But let's go into spoilers, because, guys, it's time to go into spoilers. I don't know. Let's just do spoilers.
Spoilers, and going off of what you just said, Miranda Hart gets the best payoff in the entire movie. It's like, I couldn't smile wide enough when she got her big moment in the end.
And it's like, I've enjoyed her from Call the Midwife, which is a show I realize not everyone's been watching. But, like, in Call the Midwife, she is a woman who is so much larger than everyone else and is constantly kind of called out for being different. And she gets, like, little victories in that show, but it's, like, a British drama. So, like, little victories in that show are little victories. And apparently this part was written for her, which I was like, obviously, because it's her getting to be loud and funny and wonderful and all the things that, like, you got kernels of in that show. Yeah, I really hope this means she's going to get cast in a lot more things, because, you know, Paul Feig is really good about being like, here's some amazing talent for you.
Yeah, I mean, so McCarthy wonderful. And I example. Think her part also points out something that makes Spy different from the large majority of Melissa McCarthy's movies, which is, like, a warmth she brings to it. Like, even though she's always kind of going back and forth with Melissa McCarthy with one-liners that are very funny, there's something about her character that kind of feels safe to me. It's like, well, I'm okay with Susan doing all these crazy things, because, like, she's got someone looking out for her that really cares about her.
Well, to me, it reminded me of, like, there's, like, a part where they're having cocktails and talking shit on someone, and, like, I was like, it reminded me of, like, when we go out, and there's a safe space where we can have these conversations and whatever, and then be supportive of each other.
And,
like,
all the time.
Yeah, that's right, guys. Just know that. That's all I got. That's all I got. No, but I thought it was really lovely, because, like, we've talked before about how Hollywood seems to think female friendship is a topic not worth getting into in movies, but thank God, like, Paul Feig gets it and gets that it's a rich place to, like, mine jokes and mine drama. And, you know, I think Spy, it's being held up as, like, this great thing from Melissa McCarthy, and it is. She dominates this movie. She's amazing. Jason Statham is great in this movie, and people are like, oh, right, he's done comedy. But, like, I also feel like it's a really strong narrative about female friendship and the importance of that and, you know, the fucking kick-assness of it. These women are spies.
The fight scene in the kitchen is one of the best fight sequences I've seen in a very long time. It is so clever because there's so much like legit hand-to-hand combat where you know these two ladies have trained seriously, but then there's also like hints of goofiness too where they're like hitting each other with pots and pans. It's like the perfect balance of funny and outlandish, but like serious combat too.
And that they put it in a kitchen, I feel like, is a thing specifically for haters. Like, oh, you want women in the kitchen? Bam! With butcher knives. And like that fight scene had me nervous because the girl playing the one in the jumpsuit, I don't remember her name in the movie, but you've seen the picture. She's wearing like a green jumpsuit and she looks fantastic and she's just like, wow, wow, wow. And I was like, I would be terrified of her. And then like, oh God, she gets stabbed in the hand and she's just like, whatever.
You know what else I loved and I couldn't get enough of? The rats and the bats in the building.
Of course.
It's like the greatest thing because it's something that is like, holy shit, I can't believe this is happening now. And then they don't let it go, but not in a way where it repeats something until like you're sick of it. It's just like, you need to look out for it. Like, they're there. They're all, and every time I'd catch one out of the corner of my eye, I'd start laughing. And like, sometimes the people next to me didn't see it. And I was just sitting there. No, I know.
There's like one
idiot
scene where Miranda Hart has one on her shoulder. Yeah. And she's not reacting to it at all. And I just started to giggle like a moron because she's just doing her lines. But but anyway, we should wrap up. So I think this week we're telling you Insidious Chapter 3 is a skip, but guys, Spy is the bomb.
Yeah, I freaking love this movie. I have seen it twice now. I loved it after South By, and like because of the festival vibe, I was afraid I got too hyped about it. I don't think I got hyped enough, though, because I saw it again. I'm obsessed with it. I can't wait to own this so I can watch it over and over again, because it's something that you're going to want to see multiple times and watch.
Yeah, I'm sure I missed jokes. I was laughing through parts so hard. I'm like, I don't know what just happened.
Yeah, I second that. Or third that, I guess.
All right, so that is a wrap on episode 69. You know, like Billy Madison?
We almost made it through without a juvenile 69 joke.
Every time I hear 69, though, I hear him doing that in the third grade class when they open the book. Whatever, 69. Episode 69's over. Because clearly I've had enough. So you can catch us all over the place on iTunes, where it would be very nice if you can rate and comment. And then we are on YouTube. We have our own YouTube channel, popcornprosecco.com. Like us on Facebook. And you can also talk to us on Twitter at popcornprosecco. The three of us are all over the internet as well. Christy, you want to go first?
Yeah, I write all over the web. So you can check out my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com. I have a really fun interview with Kit Harington on Screen Rant this week. He was lovely. And you can find me on Twitter at Christy Puchko.
Angie?
You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN. And you can find my writing on slashfilm.com.
I'm still giggling about my 69 joke because I'm a baby.
I feel like this makes Spy seem less impressive. People are going to be like, I mean, she laughs at the word 69. How hard can it be to make her giggle?
You were laughing at least as hard as you did at Spy.
Yeah, I'd say so. Doesn't this make you want to follow me on Twitter at PNemiroff and then read my writing on Collider.com? All right, that's it for this episode. Thank you guys for watching, and we will see you next week.
I just hear my mom's voice. Just blend in. Let somebody else win. Making a wave isn't always brave.
Brilliant.
Give up on your dreams, Susan. Just to write that in my lunchbox.
Spy you later.
I don't think that's a thing. Spy you later isn't a... Is it? No, it's not a thing.